And we're taking up Parshas Emor, which begins with a prohibition to the Kohanim, the so-called priests. Bad translation, but for want of a better term. The Kohanim are the ones who are designated to perform the service in the temple, and special rules apply to them. Essentially in two areas. One area is the area of marriage. That is a Kohen, an ordinary Kohen, because we have different categories of Kohen. Essentially, we're going to distinguish between an ordinary Kohen and the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol was the chief Kohen who was in charge of the most significant forms of service, of avoda, in the Beis HaMikdash. Most essentially, he performed the special service that was done on Yom Kippur, and only he was permitted to perform it. So there's greater stringency in his case. In two areas, one is the area of marriage. Every Kohen is forbidden from marrying a divorced woman. There are other categories that are prohibited to him as well, but the main one is that of a divorced woman. Cannot marry a divorcee. Can marry, permitted to marry, a widower. The case of the Kohen Gadol, the chief Kohen, is different. He cannot marry even a widower. He's obligated to marry a girl who's a virgin. So the law is more stringent with regard to him. The other area is the area of contact with a corpse. So one has to be aware that contact with a corpse creates a new halachic status. In Hebrew, it's called tumah. It's a hard term to translate. It's usually translated as impurity, but not a physical impurity, a spiritual type of impurity, which brings about certain laws that apply to a person when he's in that state, and there's a process of so-called tahara, which is purification. In and of itself, that's a fascinating idea. What's the philosophy behind that? What exactly is it about the tumah? It implies that there's something negative. Any Jew who comes in contact with a corpse becomes tameh, impure, and there's a very specific procedure in terms of how one can purify oneself. It involves utilization of the ashes of the para aduma, the red heifer, and other activities which can only be performed at the time when we have the temple, the Beis HaMikdash. Thus, there is no way today to achieve purification from Tumas Meis. So everybody today is in that state. The fact of the matter is that it really doesn't have practical consequences, because all of the problems, so to speak, all of the limitations about being in that state pertain to things that are done with regard to the temple, eating of sacrifices and the like, going to the Beis HaMikdash, and so forth. That's the problem in terms of going to the so-called Temple Mount, Bizman HaZeh, today, that we're in a state of tumah, and that's a problem. So that's the only practical, pretty much the only practical consequence. In terms of all aspects of religious life today, it really doesn't impinge. And Kohanim too, today, are all in a state, virtually all in a state of a tumah, but it doesn't really matter that much because they can't do the service anyways because we don't have the Beis HaMikdash. However, the prohibition of a Kohen to become tumah remains in effect. That a Kohen, even though there's no Beis HaMikdash today, and thus there's no practical consequence, still it's an inherent prohibition for a Kohen to come in contact with a mace, with a corpse. The Psukim and Emor point out, however, that there are exceptions to the rule. And there too, with regard to the exceptions, there's a distinction between the ordinary Kohen and the Kohen Gadol. The ordinary Kohen has certain exceptions, in which case he's permitted to become tameh, It's more than that, though. As you see from Rashi, you see from Chazal, that it's not just that he's permitted, but he's obligated to do so. We'll return to the idea in a second. And that is with regard to the close blood relatives. And the Torah spells it out. Mother, father, parents, siblings, a brother, sister, and his children, son or daughter. Then it says, as far as his sister is concerned, something very strange. That is, the sister is included. If his sister dies, then he's obligated. It's a mitzvah. He must. And if he refuses, we force him to become tamei by coming in contact or in her presence in the same room. That would also convey the tumah. But it says that the sister who's a virgin, who's close to him, who has not been with a man. So basically, she's not been married. To her, he is matame, which excludes a sister who's been married. Once a sister has been married, she's removed from the category, and he's not matame to her. Now, the Rambam in Hilchos Eivel, Morning, Chapter 2, Halacha 10, says, Achos Onesua, his married sister, he is not matame to her, even if she was married to a Kohen, which is interesting. Why would that make any difference? As it says, Apsula, Hakrova Elov. I mean, obviously, every word in the Pasuk is significant. It's a modification. Asher Lohoi Sol Ish, who had not been married. So now the Rambam explains the significance of each term. Hapsula, prat, la nusa, umafuta. So literally, it's a virgin, which is to the exclusion of a girl, even if she was not married, who had been seduced or raped. So once that occurs, she's no longer in the category that he would be matame to her. She has to be a psula, a virgin. Then it says, I'm skipping a couple lines. Ashelo Hoysola Ish, who had not been married to a man, Prat La Rusa, to the exclusion of an Arusa. Arusa is someone, a girl, who received Kedushin. Kedushin is the first stage in the marriage. And then the second is Nisuin, is the completion of the marriage, where they actually begin married life. They live together. Today we do this both kinyanim together under the chuppah, but in older times they would separate. In other words, first the man would designate the woman. That's kedushin. At that point in time, she becomes prohibited to any other man, and she's also prohibited to the husband. The marriage is not complete yet. Then they, about 12 months later, they would do the nisuin, and then the actual married life would begin. Today we do them both together. But the Rambam here is talking about a girl who was an Arusa, who just had Kedushin, but she was not Nesua. And he's not Metamik to her, even if she's an Arusa to Kohen. He keeps repeating the same thing, even if she's an Arusa to a Kohen. Then he says as follows, Misgarsha Achoso Min Ha'erisin Metamela. If she was divorced from Erisin, that is that it never reached the stage of Nisuin. Because once a girl is mikudeshes, and she's an arusa, she's prohibited. For all intents and purposes, she has the prohibitions of marriage, and in order to become freed, she requires a get. Just like she requires a get if she's completely married, if she's in a suwa. So he says that if she is divorced from Erison, then he can be metame to her. Shenemar, because it says Akrove Elov, who's close to him. Lahavi es hamagureshes min ha'erison, to include one who was divorced from Erison. Let's begin with this question. We've seen that there is an exception, that the Kohen is Matame to these close relatives. But let's ask ourselves the question. Is the Torah saying merely that it's permitted, or is it more than permitted? It's obligatory. If that's the case, what is the idea of the mitzvah?
Right.
For example, is it a mitzvah for every Jew who's not a Kohen? Is it a mitzvah to be metamic to the mace? The basic mitzvah is avelos. In general, there's no mitzvah. There's no specific obligation on an ordinary Jew to render himself tamei to the mace. There is a mitzvah of avelos, of mourning, that devolves upon everybody. By a Kohen, it's not a matter of choice. Take a look at the Rambam in Perek Beis, chapter 2, that's Halacha 6. He says, Kama chamura mitzvah avelos. See how significant, how stringent the law of avelos is. Sherei nitchis lo hatuma b'pnei krovav. For we see that the Torah pushed aside the prohibition of tuma in the face of close relatives for the Kohen. Kidei sheyis asek imohen, in order that he should be osek, that is, to be involved in the preparations for the burial. So, obviously, there would be a hindrance if he could not become tamei. So the Torah pushed aside the prohibition of tuma to enable him to be involved with the needs of the deceased. V'yis abel alayhen, and he should mourn for them. As it says, he quotes the pasuk, kiyum l'shero, for his close relative, who's close to him, and so forth. Lo yitama. Now, what is the meaning of the word lo yitama? This question was raised before. And here the Rambam explains it, based upon Chazal, that lo yitama is not merely saying that it's permitted, but to indicate that he's obligated. It's a command. Mitzvah saseh, it's a positive command. She'im lo rotzo l'yitame, if he did not want to become tame, mitamit oso al karcho. We force him to do so against his will. Now he goes a little bit further. Bamed devar mamurim, when is this applicable? Bischarim, with males, shehuzeru ala tuma, who were prohibited concerning tuma. Aval hakehenos, but the female, that is, the wife of a Kohen, the daughter of a Kohen, let's say the daughter of a Kohen, rather. Ho of the Aaron Misharas ala tuma, since they're not warned, they're not prohibited about tuma. Kain Einon Mitsuvos L'Stame L'Krovim. So too, they're not commanded to become tame to relatives. Ela Imratsu Mistamos. But if they want to, they can. Vim Lo Ratsu Lo Matamos. If not, not. Which clearly supports the point that I made before, that in general, no, there's no command like this for an ordinary Jew. You see that from the case of the females, who are, so to speak, from the Kohanim. I mean, a woman is not really a Kohen in terms of doing the Avoda, but she's the daughter of a Kohen. She's permitted to eat the Truma and so forth. So, there is some kind of a Havamina that she too would come under this prohibition. I'm not pursuing that at the moment. But whatever, the Rambam is saying that she does not have the mitzvah. Why doesn't she have the mitzvah? Because she doesn't have the prohibition. So it's interesting. It's sort of ironic. There is a certain irony over here in that, on the one hand, the Kohen is under a prohibition. Cannot become tamei to a mace. And the ordinary Jew can. Yet, there's a certain leniency that seems to emerge from that. It's ironic that in a case of a close relative, however, the law is more demanding on a Kohen in terms of where the permission is in effect. One would think that with regard to the seven relatives, the close relatives, the Kohen would be the same as the ordinary Jew. The Torah simply removed the prohibition. However, that's not the case, because he's still in a different plane. The ordinary Jew does not have the prohibition, but there's no specific obligation for him to become tamei either. However, with regard to the Kohen, It's more than simply saying that the prohibition has been removed. That's true, but now a new obligation emerges. Let me clarify. It's in general a mitzvah for a person to be osek with the mace. An ordinary Jew. We're not saying it's not a mitzvah, it's a very big mitzvah. But what we're saying is there's no specific mitzvah for the ordinary Jew to necessarily become tameh. Let's say it's not even necessary. Let's say today you have people who prepare the body, you carry the body, whatever. No one is saying that there's a specific obligation to see to it that you become tameh. However, by the case of a kohen, there is a specific obligation which can't be avoided. As the Rambam said, that it's a mitzvah. And by using the case of the female kohanot, so to speak, who don't have the mitzvah, since they don't have the prohibition, they don't have the mitzvah. So therefore, the two are interconnected. To understand the idea over here, you have to understand that it's a result of the fact that since he has a prohibition, it's ironic that since he has a general prohibition, because of that, he has a mitzvah in the case where the obstacle is removed. But why should that be the case? Why shouldn't it merely be that the obstacle has been removed? And now he's the same as everybody else. We're saying no. Since the obstacle has been removed, now he has a mitzvah to become tamei. And he can't avoid it. If you look at the Rambam's expression, he introduces this idea with the statement, see how significant, how important, or how demanding is the mitzvah of Avelos. Now, you got to pay careful attention to that, because what he's going to do is to mention the issue of becoming tameh to the mace. But this falls under the heading of a demonstration of how significant the mitzvah of Avelos. Avelos is mourning. And of course the question is, what does this have to do with mourning? Because there's no suggestion that in those cases where the Kohen is not permitted to become tameh, he still has to mourn. Mourning is separate. You talk about Shiva sitting in the house and all the laws of mourning apply to a Kohen regardless of whether he could be tameh to the person or not. Like the sister who's married and to whom he can't be tameh, he still mourns for her. Does not prevent him from mourning. So this seems to be a different issue. Yet the Rambam is introducing this by saying, look how significant mourning is. Because the Torah pushed aside tumah. That is to say, the Rambam is connecting the removal of the prohibition of tumah, he's connecting it to the significance of avelus. That's what's interesting over here. You would think it's two separate things. And he explains it. He says, in order for the Kohen to be misasek, to be personally involved with them, and to mourn for them. But what does one thing have to do with the other? What is the mourning is the mourning. And it doesn't seem that there's any problem. If a Kohen can't become tameh to the mace, that doesn't seem to hinder the mourning. Yet the Rambam is saying that the permission over here is related to the phenomenon of mourning. The basic idea that emerges from this is that the idea of mourning, the concept of mourning, is founded on a very fundamental, a very significant idea in Yadus. I don't think people appreciate it enough, understand it enough. And that is the idea of Kavod HaMeis. Kavod HaMeis is a very significant institution to give honor to the deceased. It's tied into the whole idea of Kavod HaAdam. The Torah is very demanding about this. And it may be difficult for people to appreciate it in this day and age. The Torah prevents dissection of the body or organ transplants. All these things are serious issues. Of course, there are exceptions where it's a matter of life and death. But for ordinary scientific research, it's prohibited. You have on your driver's license, if a person wants to donate their organs, if they should die in an accident, a person can indicate. That's prohibited by Jewish law. As I said, unless it's a specific case where it's an immediate situation of pikuach nefesh, that it would lead to the saving of life. So it's difficult for people to understand that, how significant the institution of Kavod HaMeis is. It's a very, very important idea. And that's the whole institution of Avelos, of mourning. That when a person dies, there must be mourning for that person. It's very interesting that we've learned, we actually did this last year. Generally, there's always someone around that's going to be mourning, because the obligation of mourning falls upon the close relatives, and most people will have a close relative who will mourn for them. What about a situation of an individual who doesn't have anybody to mourn for them? The Rambam talks about that. And he says that the community has to appoint designated mourners. 10 people, and they sit in the house of the deceased and they mourn, and others come. It sounds interesting. It's a phenomenal idea. It's fascinating. Others come and give them, they comfort them, comfort the mourners. Even though they're not real mourners, they're just designated mourners. But that's a very significant thing. You can't have someone die and nobody mourn for him. That's a complete negation of the dignity of that individual. So apparently the basis for this exemption, there's a certain ambivalency that's operational over here. A certain ambivalence. And that is to say that on the one hand, there's negative. It's a negative phenomenon for the Kohen to become tamei to the meis. On the other hand, there's the issue of, as a result of that, there's a diminishing in terms of the kavod hameis. You can't give the full and proper kavod hameis. Now, in the case of the closest relatives, where the obligation of kavod is greatest, here the Torah made the exception. But the exception over here is not just that it's okay for him to do so, but it's because of the chiyuv, it's because of the obligation of kavod. So it's precisely because there's a prohibition involved that to remove that. That is, normally the Kohen is under an obligation to remain in a state of tahara, and not to allow himself to come into a state of tumah. So the very fact that in this case he pushes it aside and becomes tameh is the greatest demonstration of kavod hameis. So that's why he's obligated to do so. He can't avoid it. It becomes an obligation. Where, however, it's a situation where there's no specific prohibition, so then there's no specific obligation. Because the fact that an ordinary Jew became tameh in and of itself does not show any kavod, because you have no prohibition. So that's why it's not obligatory. Of course, it falls under the heading of a big mitzvah to be misasek. But if there are other people that are misasek, that are involved with the mace, so then there's no specific mitzvah for you to officially become tamei as a result of this mace. That wouldn't be any honor. But since for the Kohen it's a prohibition, and once the Torah pushed it aside because of the obligation of kavod hameis, the obligation of Avelos, and apparently the Avelos is not complete. It's a greater Avelos. Because the Rambam puts the two together. That yis'asek v'yis'abel. That when a person actually comes in contact with the mace, it creates a greater emotional impact, and the mourning is going to be that much greater. So the fact that there's a certain distance and he didn't go to the funeral, so he still mourns, but it doesn't partake of the same degree. In this case, it's all subsumed under the heading of kavod hameis, and it's precisely because there is a prohibition in general that normally he's not allowed to give up his state of tahara. So here the very kavod is that he gives up his state of tahara for the sake of the meis. So that becomes a very significant demonstration of kavod hameis, and that's why it's a mitzvah to do so, and if he refuses, we coerce him to do so.